wrote the message on paper, and not by hand, of course. It might have been traced to us. And anyway, my handwriting's terrible. But we printed it off. Avon put on a pair of gloves, rolled up the message, and put it inside the bottle. The whole thing was Avon's idea, and I must admit I was sceptical. It seemed like a tenuous way of achieving a crucial aspect of the plan, and not for the first time I told him so. "Can you think of a better way of getting the message there?" Avon replied. "Yes," I started, but he interrupted me. "You're going to outline one or more of the suggestions which we have already discarded." Avon screwed the bottle's cap into place. "As the situation hasn't changed since we last discussed them, I don't see the point. I'm not advocating this idea for its whimsical charm." That's true. Avon has never struck me as having any appreciation for whimsy. "Its lack of sophistication is precisely why it's likely to work," Avon continued. "Stealth is key to our plan, and this has a high chance of reaching its target unnoticed. Now, do you want to throw it, or should I?"
You can do it."
Avon stepped to the harbour's edge with the bottle in the palm of his hand, down by his side. He started to pull his arm back, but I put a hand on his shoulder to stop him.
"Not like that. If you're going to throw it properly."
I took the bottle from him, rocked back on one foot, and hurled it over arm into the sea. I remember how it caught the rays of the setting sun, and then it pitched downwards and hit the water. It disappeared beneath the surface before rising again and bobbing gently away from us.
"How you throw it doesn't make any difference. It'll get there anyway."
I shrugged. "No harm in giving it a decent start. Come on." And then we left the docks and headed back to the city. We still had a lot of work to do that night.
"I'm afraid that's the end of our session."
"Already?
We have a lot of patients here. I can only afford 20 minutes each."
"Sorry, I think I rambled on."
"The alleviator often affects people like that. I try not to interrupt or guide patients. I let them explain it all their own way."
"It doesn't quite feel like it's me talking."
"Yes, it tends to alter your speech patterns too."
"How does it work?"
"It subdues the part of your subconscious which blocks unpleasant or disturbing memories and prevents you from filtering your responses to leave out elements which have a strong emotional association."
"So it makes you tell the truth?"
"It helps the recovery process to talk through the trauma honestly. And it's useful information for the doctors. Don't worry, this is all confidential. On some planets, the police would have automatic access to this kind of material, but not here."
"Of course, not here. You're probably wondering how my story so far is relevant to my injury."
"No. If you think it's relevant to your state of mind."
"I'm afraid I had to start at the beginning or the rest won't make sense. It's all rather complicated. When am I next seeing you?"
"Tomorrow."
"I'm looking forward to it."
"Do you need help?"
"No, the doctors say I should try to stand alone. I need to build the muscles back up."
"You seem to be doing well."
"And they say I could be off the crutches in a couple of days. Could you open the door for me, please?"
"Oh, of course."
"Thank you."
"New patient record. Admission number 9287/832. Patient's name, Carlin Gazan. Attach recording and add notes. Patient was found by medics on the White Beach at the west limits of Engel City. Delirious, suffering extensive laser damage to his left leg. He'd been shot, but he was in shock when he came in. He didn't talk for the first few days. We pulled his ID and medical history off the system. Not many clues about how he got himself shot. He seemed reluctant to talk about it so far, but the alleviator seems to be opening him up. His residential record suggests he lived in the city all his life and has spent most of that time unemployed. He's never left Caborn, not even a moon trip. His previous medical history contains nothing of note. Based on this background and this first meeting, the patient seems fanciful. Caborn has five residents named Avon. All of them seem highly unlikely to be the man described by Gazan. This Avon may have been lying to the patient about his name, but I'm considering the possibility that he doesn't exist at all. I'm intrigued that Avon convinced the patient that sending a message in a bottle was in any way logical. Eccentric at best, yet it doesn't seem contrived for effect. Perhaps Avon is merely a device which the patient uses to offload blame for his own extremes of behaviour, actions which he himself is at a loss to explain. In any case, he seems an ideal subject for the Mentex trial, so I'll add it to his daily prescription when he comes back tomorrow. Save and close. Send in the next patient, please.
I slept much better last night.
That's good to hear, Carlin. Could you roll up your sleeve, please?
Of course. Maybe our session yesterday helped to clear my mind. Is the stuff in this drip feed different from the stuff I have at my bedside?
Yes, this is a mood leveller, putting you in a relaxed state so your body is best able to heal itself.
Right, good.
So?
So, where did we get up to yesterday?
Here.
And then we left the docks and headed back to the city. We still had a lot of work to do that night.
That's right. We had to track down two people. In fact, our computer had done most of the work for us. We knew exactly where they'd be, their whole daily routine, and the best moment to kidnap them.
Kidnap?
Yes. And not with any malice towards them, you understand. We were after them purely because they were due to present a case to the arbitrator early the next morning. Their names were Gorham Vi and Uriel Jantz. Avon and I split up. He tackled Jantz, I went after Vi. You know who Vi is? He's a representative for the shipping union. In his 40s, quite a big chap. I found him in a bar, observed him from a distance for maybe an hour, and then I went to the serving point at the same time as him and slipped delayed action sedatives into his drink when he was looking the other way. It started to take effect as he left the bar. I walked alongside him. The drugs made him so suggestible, he believed me when I told him I was a friend who was helping him home. I guided him to a vacant apartment I'd prepared earlier in the day and locked us both in. The apartment was dilapidated but secure and clean, which was good because Vi would be spending the next 24 hours here. And as I say, I had nothing against him, and I didn't want him to suffer any more than necessary. I sent a message to his partner that he wouldn't be returning home that night. Then I took some images of him and a sample of his DNA. I gave him a second dose of sedatives and left. It was straightforward enough to disguise myself as Vi. With the DNA and images, I was able to commission a flesh mask and some physical bulking on the black market. I then bought a cheap suit in his size and spent the hours until morning familiarising myself with the case Vi was preparing to put to the arbitrator. It was to do with safety standards. I won't bore you with the details. At 0900, I presented myself at the ferry terminal, where transport had been arranged to the hearing house. The only other person in the waiting room was a slim young man with thick artificial hair covering for premature baldness. I recognised him on sight as Uriel Jantz. But if all had gone to plan, he would actually be my colleague Avon under a disguise like mine. For a moment, I worried that all hadn't gone to plan, and I was sitting opposite the real Jantz. But then we made eye contact, and the other man gave me a nod, and I knew Avon had succeeded. I'm not sure why I doubted him. Our identities were checked before boarding the ferry. We both passed muster as to who we claimed to be, and a guard followed us into the small boat. Avon didn't talk to me, which we'd agreed on. It saved us having to keep up the pretense. The ferry skimmed across the sea at great speed. Emerging from the dim and dusty atmosphere of the city, it was clear and beautiful out on the water. And although I felt anxious about the task that lay ahead, I actually enjoyed the crossing. We spend most of our time on planets much bleaker than Caborn, and crossing a bright open space, it struck a chord, although I'm not sure why. It's certainly not like anywhere I'm familiar with. Maybe something I've forgotten. There are some things from my past I don't remember. I thought the arbitrator was a lucky man to live out here, and I wondered if he knew how lucky. Probably not. I mean, that's the point, isn't it? He was supposed to be isolated and not know what was going on in the rest of the world. He probably even felt jealous of them sometimes, if he ever wondered what life was like for other people. The ferry slowed and I looked out of the window as we approached the island. We'd studied the hearing house thoroughly before coming here, of course, but the pictures didn't do it justice. The high planes of glass that make up the bulk of the structure rise to a peak in an organic sort of way, as if the sand has piled up of its own accord and fused itself together. I remember thinking it must be difficult to keep clean. But of course, it gets a lot of important visitors from off-world, so I suppose they put the effort into keeping it nice. If only they looked after the city so well. We docked and disembarked, emerging onto a harbour in brilliant sunshine. It's humid out there, and the warmth hits you at the back of the throat as you breathe in. The small harbour also hosted a couple of patrol ships and a rather impressive yacht. I could see four members of security staff, not including our escort. Two stationed at the harbour, two at the door. From our survey, I knew there would be at least two more stationed inside, plus two patrolling the beach. We couldn't bring any special equipment with us because it would have shown up on the security check, so we needed to consider our escape route in case things went wrong. This seemed clear, because although there's another way out of the building via the arbitrator's living quarters, there's only one way off the island. Unless we fancied trying to swim for it, we would have to head back to the harbour, and this was the quickest route. Our escape would probably rely on disarming one of the guards inside the building, getting hold of their weapon, and using the arbitrator as a hostage. I knew Avon would also be thinking about escape routes, and I wondered if he had any better ideas. As we entered the building, we went through another security check, and then into another waiting room, where we suddenly found ourselves unaccompanied. I wondered if this was a trick to see what we'd do when we were left alone. But they couldn't know about our plan, could they? I paced back and forth around the waiting room. I tried to catch Avon's eye, but his attention was fixed on a palm-top computer. We'd been explicitly told not to bring anything like that. But Chance was exactly the sort of person who would consider himself too important to bother with such regulations. So I suppose it was in character, even if I'd rather Avon hadn't taken the risk. I wondered what he was actually doing on that computer. Suddenly, Avon spoke, without looking up from his computer. His voice was unfamiliar, modulated to sound like Jance's, but I recognised the rhythm and tone. The trouble with preparing so thoroughly for something is that by the time you reach the actual event, you're just going through the motions. It can be rather boring. "Speak for yourself," I replied. Avon laughed, I didn't, and we lapsed back into silence. A guard entered, and the first thing she did was point at Avon's computer. "Hand that over, please, sir." Avon gave her a tight smile. Again, the face was someone else's, but the smile was his own, and quickly finished the task he was running before switching off the device and placing it in the guard's hand. The guard then turned to me. "And you?" she asked. I held out my empty hands. "I didn't bring anything." "Good." The guard shot a pointed glance at Avon, and then she motioned for him to stand. I was standing already. And we were escorted through to a room marked in several languages as the hearing room. You've probably never seen the hearing room, because they don't allow any kind of recording equipment in there except the auto clerk, which produces just a text summary for public consumption. So only people who've gone there to make a case have seen it. It's not large, hardly any bigger than this office. It's not supposed to have many people in there at once. They prefer to keep things simple. There are no external walls and no windows. It's entirely white, and again, it must need constant attention from cleaning drones. The light sources are embedded in the walls, so the room glows. At the front of the room, on a raised dais, there's a desk which has nothing on it. And sitting at the desk, as we walked in, was a man of about 50, also dressed in white, just a shirt and trousers, although I noticed a white hat and long white coat hanging on a hat stand next to him. The man was the arbitrator. Facing the desk were two white lecterns, one of which was marked with Jance's name, the other with Vi's. The arbitrator indicated that we should take our places, and we did so, although for a split second I couldn't remember what my name was supposed to be. The whiteness was overwhelming. It reminded me of a courtroom I was in once before. But perhaps they're all like that. The effect is like popping up to heaven to sort out some paperwork, and that's clearly deliberate. You're supposed to feel that you're coming somewhere pure and clean. The door closed behind us, and the guard who had escorted us inside remained. The arbitrator addressed us.
Thank you for coming, gentlemen. My understanding is that your presence here concerns a dispute over safety standards in local shipping, over which industrial action has been threatened.
He spoke slowly and carefully, as if he was making the words up as he went along, to describe things nobody had ever described before.
Is that correct?
He asked. Evan and I both said yes. I hoped it wasn't a trick question.
Good. Mr. Jance, if you could begin.
Avon and I had agreed beforehand that whichever of us got to speak first would use the code words immediately. And so he opened by saying, "The action threatened by Mr. Vi and his colleagues is reckless, cynical, and..." And Avon seemed to leave a tiny pause, as if creating a bit of suspense, before he delivered the final code word. "Frankly, pleonectic." Avon didn't stop there, launching into an account of the dispute from Jance's point of view. But while he stayed in character, I watched the arbitrator's face. He was definitely unsettled, and he looked from myself to Avon and back again. Obviously, he had received our message. Oh, I should explain about the message properly. The one we put in the bottle and threw out to sea. The bottle was fitted with a guidance system in its cap, and a very effective magnetic propulsion system in its base. We knew that the arbitrator went running round the island 3 times every morning before commencing work, and that he did this unaccompanied. The bottle was programmed to head for the island, wait close to shore, and then as the arbitrator approached, the bottle would come into the beach. On the island's scrupulously tidy beaches, the bottle would certainly attract his attention. And when he touched it, the identity key would recognize him and release the message. The message contained simple instructions, which the arbitrator was to follow when somebody spoke the 3 code words to him. If he told anyone about the message, he would be killed. If he did anything out of the ordinary, he would be killed. If he did not follow the instructions when the time came, he would be killed. And then, if all that had been properly done, the note and the bottle would dissolve. The arbitrator sat there whilst Avon finished making his case, and then I put forward my own. I'm not sure he properly listened to any of it, and he didn't ask any questions. Instead, when I'd finished speaking, he did as he'd been told to do. Without any deliberation, he decided in my favour, checked his watch, commented that he had some free time before his next hearing, and invited us both to join him on his yacht.
Didn't that seem odd to anyone?
No, that's what the yacht was for. He often took people out there after hearings and chatted to them, but only after hearings. He never spoke to anyone before hearings. Had no preconceptions.
No connections, no interests. He couldn't be bribed.
I understand that's the theory.
It does work. There have been statistical surveys. I'm glad we live on a world with the lowest corruption in the sector, aren't you?
Still, it's a strange sort of life. He rarely met the same person twice. Do you think someone can still connect with issues on a human level when they live like that?
They give him empathy tests on a regular basis, you know. I suppose you did already know. You seem to know everything else about him.
As much as we could find out.
Well, that wouldn't be hard. It's all public knowledge.
Is it?
Of course.
Not according to my computer, it isn't.
Your computer?
He's very good at finding out things that aren't public knowledge. Shall I continue?
Yes, of course. Sorry.
The guards didn't question the arbitrator's decision to take us out onto the yacht. To his credit, he stayed calm. I imagine he'd been given training on situations like this. He'd probably done some simulations. I just hoped he wasn't going to call our bluff. The arbitrator led us out of the building the way we'd come, with the guard bringing up the rear. The arbitrator made some innocuous talk to Avon about the shipping business, which was apparently an interest of his. I suppose he saw a lot of ships out there. Avon seemed to bluff his way through it well enough. We boarded the yacht and our guard followed us and was joined by another guard. Unfortunately, this was what we'd suspected would happen. But our information was that the yacht was free of listening devices, and we needed that to be true if this was going to work. Once aboard, we walked down below deck to a spacious, comfortable lounge with an auto bar in the corner. On our right, as we walked in, there was a monitor which showed the view from the front of the yacht. At the far wall, there was a small cylindrical elevator which seemed to lead up to the wheelhouse. The arbitrator programmed a course and then offered us a drink. I accepted, Avon declined. One of the guards stood by the monitor, the other stayed on deck. The yacht pulled away from the harbour and out to sea, and the arbitrator sat with us.
If I'm on my own, I prefer to sail the ship by hand up there.
He pointed to the wheelhouse.
It's very invigorating, steering a vehicle manually. But one has to concentrate. And I don't wish to be antisocial.
I nodded. Avon said nothing. And there was a moment of silence. Then the arbitrator did the next thing we'd instructed him to do. He turned to the guard and said,
Did you hear that?
The arbitrator looked towards one of the narrow windows that ran along the port and starboard walls, through which we could see along the smooth surface of the deck. The guard followed his gaze and then shook her head. The arbitrator frowned.
I heard something moving in the water. I'm sure of it. Could you go and check?
The guard nodded, apparently taking this in her stride, and walked up the steps back to the deck. The arbitrator operated a hand control and the hatch slid shut. Quietly enough, I hoped, that the guards wouldn't notice until they tried to come back down. The arbitrator sat opposite us and said in a low voice,
Who are you?
We told him our real names. We had to work quickly. We didn't know how long we had. Avon asked if he were being listened to. The arbitrator confirmed we weren't, and Avon rose and strode over to the monitor on the wall. He turned off the image of the sea and entered the system's command structure.
What are you doing?
The arbitrator asked. Avon didn't reply and kept working at the computer. I asked the arbitrator, Do you genuinely believe that the court sessions aren't listened to?
There's the official record,
the arbitrator began, but Avon cut him off. The Federation knows everything that happens in that room. They've been listening in on all your sessions for decades.
This is an independent colony. I know what happens on some of the other colonies. I've met those pathetic Federation stooge governors. They're charming, convincing, until you change the parameters of the debate, and then they can't back up their own arguments. They can't reframe them. They can't move from the line they've been given. They're actors, that's all.
The arbitrator straightened up.
That is not me.
Avon smiled. Nobody said it was. They've come up with an effective way of controlling this planet without putting you in their pocket.
You went to all this effort, threatened my life, just to tell me the truth,
I said. The arbitrator started to bluster again, but we didn't have time, so I talked over him. The Federation monitors all activity in the hearings room. They keep track of every upcoming case, and when they want a decision to go a certain way, they insert subliminal messages into your evening entertainment before it happens. The arbitrator left a short pause before he said,
Preposterous.
But in that pause, I knew he'd just become less confident than he sounded. We don't have time to go through every decision they've intervened in, but we know exactly which ones they are. The pattern is clear. Major policy decisions which have been referred to you persistently go in the Federation's favour.
What kind of decisions?
They've manipulated your tax system. They've avoided legislation that would have enabled you to demand fairer prices for your mineral produce. All justified as empowering the local market, but in fact, working to the Federation's agenda. Avon spoke, although he kept working. I wished he would concentrate, but I didn't want to antagonize him right now. It gets worse. They're manipulating your laws to make you more like a Federation planet. Should they ever push for integration, they've paved the way very effectively. The arbitrator peered at us both.
Why should I believe any of this?
The hatch leading to the deck started to open. Avon brought up the monitor display of the sea and stepped away from the monitor. By the time the guard had any view of what we were doing, Avon was standing at the altar bar, fetching himself a drink. The guard reached the bottom of the steps and left a slight uneasy silence before she spoke. For the first time, she had an inkling that all was not normal.
"Well,"
said the arbitrator.
"There was nothing there. What did you think you heard?"
The arbitrator replied in a vague way, floundering slightly. Avon took action, addressing the young guard. "Do you ever run into any pirates out here?" He stepped across the room towards her. The guard glanced at the arbitrator, who nodded his approval for her to speak.
"Sometimes. It's an increasing problem for my company." Avon put an arm around her shoulder and guided her towards the stairs. "We're looking for a new security solution at the moment. Could you tell me what level of force you're authorized to use?"
And the pair of them vanished up the stairs, continuing to talk shop. Behind his back, Avon gave me a signal with his hand, which let me know he'd completed his work on the computer. When I was alone with the arbitrator, I went to the monitor myself and turned it on. Avon had disabled all the security protocols, as well as the restrictions that were there to isolate the arbitrator from the outside world.
"Any thoughts about what we discussed before?"
I asked him while I looked for the relevant information.
"If there was any truth to what you told me, someone would have noticed by now."
"Someone has. Us."
"I mean the government. Someone in authority. They wouldn't stand for this."
"I suppose I can't blame you for being so naive. You don't know what the Federation are like. You're not supposed to know. A lot of the time, they don't even have to manipulate or control. They're so powerful, people want to be on the right side of them, to the extent that those people are willing to let this happen."
And I changed the location of the monitor's display so that it was directly in front of him, and showed him what was really going on. I'd opened up a number of media feeds just to give him a sample of what was happening on this planet every day. The scale of poverty, high unemployment, perfunctory public services, high crime, poor health, civil unrest, and all this on one of the most mineral-rich planets in the sector.
"So tell me, is this the world you thought you lived in?"
The arbitrator stared at the display.
"This can't be right."
He pointed at the stream of information.
"You planted this."
I didn't answer. Just kept showing him more and more, to the point where he could no longer deny it. Yes. If we'd worked long enough, we could have faked it. But it had depth. It felt real.
"Why are people putting up with this?"
"It's happened gradually. To them, the difference isn't as stark as what you're seeing. If anyone does question it, the authorities blame whatever outside factors seem convenient. It's nothing they can control, they say. Maybe things will change if everyone works harder. Meanwhile, the Federation continues to exploit your wealth to supply its own operations. And they always want more. They'll never know everything, or control everything, which means they can always know more and control more. That's what you're feeding. A beast which believes it can never grow too large and that no cost is too high to do so."
Oh.
Good grief. These sessions just fly by.
If you'd like more time, I can push back my next appointment.
That's very kind of you, but no. I'm feeling quite tired. I'd rather go back to my bed. Can you disconnect the drip?
Oh, of course.
Thank you.
I'll see you tomorrow?
At the same time, yes. Goodbye.
Open record. Fascinating session with the patient. His fantasy life is much more elaborate than I initially suspected, and it seems consistent with itself. He seems intelligent, yet if he could carry out a plan like this, he'd never have been unemployed or destitute. He talks about owning a computer that knows secrets. He constructs conspiracy theories about the Federation. There's a great deal to unpack here. What interests me is why this fantasy, and why the interest in the arbitrator. Perhaps he struggles to make decisions himself. In any case, he makes an excellent subject for the Mentex trial. In a couple of sessions' time, we should be able to observe changes in his psychological state, and I may start challenging his story. Having studied the doctor's report, I suspect he will blame Avon for a wound that was actually self-inflicted. Save and close. Information request. Activity around the arbitrator and the hearing house between date 6.12 and 6.15. No, 6.16. Are you comfortable with the drip?
Yes, fine, thanks.
And how are you feeling today?
Very good, actually.
I see you're not using the crutches.
No. I'm still getting the odd shooting pain where the wound was, but otherwise I almost feel back to normal.
Normal? That's the word you'd use?
Yes. Why? Do you think there's another word I should use?
Have you thought any more about the events we've discussed in these sessions?
Not really. I haven't talked about it to anyone else.
Because you were afraid of what other people might say?
No, because you're the only one who's asked. Do you think it sounds far-fetched, what I've been telling you so far?
Do you?
No.
I think we'll return to this at the end of the session.
All right. I'd just been telling the arbitrator about the Federation, hadn't I?
That's right.
Well, after that, the arbitrator stared at the monitor for a minute or two, which was understandable, but we needed to get a move on. This afternoon, you're going to decide whether a clinical drug trial will be curtailed. You might remember it. You gave it the green light 5 months ago.
I make a lot of decisions.
It's called Mentex. It's a Federation project. They'll have told you it's an antipsychotic used to treat schizophrenia. In fact, it's a sophisticated behavioural moderator designed to promote shared values. It's a progression of the kind of drugs they use to subjugate the population on Earth, but it actively blocks some types of thinking while encouraging others by regulating the release of endorphins. You realise the implications of such a drug?
Is that possible?
That's what they're trying to find out. But given the scale of the trial, they seem confident it will work.
And when you say promote shared values.
Federation values. Obedience, acceptance, a desire for collective achievement, a willingness to make sacrifices for the whole.
But if this is only being given to the mentally ill...
That's only the start. The Mentex study will come back negative because the drug is being tested under the wrong criteria. That's why your doctors are proposing to curtail the study. They can tell already that the drug isn't as effective as the treatments they already have. But the Federation will analyse the data themselves to see how the drug affects a range of personalities, particularly less stable personalities. They need to make sure that it doesn't make existing psychological conditions worse. And once the study is complete, Mentex will be officially declared a failure and withdrawn. But if they're satisfied with the result, it'll be reintroduced by stealth, in water and food.
Do they do that?
Standard practice on Federation worlds. That's why they're carrying out the study here. They need to know how it affects people who aren't already on their existing control drugs.
If I curtail the study, will it make any difference? I mean, won't they just start using it anyway?
No. It's essential that they know of any possible side effects. Think about the scale of what they're planning. Feeding this stuff to whole populations. A problem could very quickly get out of hand. They need to be thorough, and they will be thorough.
But there'll be another study. They'll find another planet where they can carry it out.
I know. But if we can set them back, any delay is valuable. With the things we're planning...
What? What are you planning?
I wish I could tell you, give you more confidence. But I can't. And it's essential that you don't give them any indication that you've been compromised. That's why we had to do things this way. We don't want them to know anyone's talked to you, least of all Avon and I. Whether you take any further action to stem the Federation's influence over the affairs of this planet is up to you. Although, of course, it will put you at risk.
Will it?
If Avon had been there, he would have kicked me for not playing down the risk. He strongly believed we should exploit this situation for all it was worth and get the arbitrator to reverse the Federation's advantage on Caborn. In fact, he'd spoken up in favour of broadcasting our own subliminal signals into the arbitrator's home. But copying the Federation's methods would be the grossest hypocrisy. It was only fair to let the man know he'd been used and what he was in for if he helped us. I don't know how much, but there is certainly a risk. If they realise what's happened, they'll probably arrange for you to be replaced.
How can they arrange a thing like that?
They're aware of one or two indiscretions on your part during your time in this role.
And so are you. It's the isolation. One forgets how to behave. And you'd use it against me too?
No. This should be your own decision. And if you don't mind, I think it's time you made it.
I need a minute to think.
I decided not to antagonize him by pressing for a response yet. I'd said all I needed to say, and even if the guard returned, the arbitrator could still find a way to indicate his decision. During the long minutes that followed, whilst I paced around the room and tried not to let my frustration show, we heard voices from up on deck. We couldn't make out what they were saying, but they were loud, and one of them was Avon's. For a moment I thought he'd been uncovered and was pretending to be indignant to deflect attention, but I realised it wasn't that sort of shouting. The guards sounded panicky and Avon was urgent. Footsteps thundered from one end of the yacht to the other, and then the yacht lurched round and sped up. Even with the compensator smoothing the journey for us in the lounge, things were still getting rough. The arbitrator stood and walked to the steps.
What's happening up there?
I warned him to be careful, but he ignored me.
This is something to do with you, isn't it?
He was right, as it turned out, but it had nothing to do with our plan. As the arbitrator tried to climb up, the other guard, the one who'd been out on deck the whole time, blocked his way. Stay down below, sir.
But the... what the hell's going on?
Blustered the arbitrator. Low-flying aircraft on our tail, sir, replied the guard. They look to be armed. Mr. Jantz has taken the controls.
Mr. Jantz? But you can't put our lives in his hands. He's not even...
I interrupted him. Mr. Jantz is fully qualified to pilot this type of vessel. I agree with your guard. The safest place for you is down here.
This is my boat, and I shall...
But his next words were cut off by a hail of gunfire, which also cut off the life of the guard in front of us. The arbitrator yelped and dodged back as the body fell. I stepped in and caught the guard. Close the hatch! I shouted, but the arbitrator was already operating the controls. I laid the guard down and quickly looked over the body, but he was certainly dead, two bullets having violently entered his skull.
Are these your people?
The arbitrator asked. Why would these be my people? If I was going to attack the yacht, don't you think I'd have waited until I wasn't on it? The wall monitor chimed, and Avon's voice came from the speaker.
I expect you'll have gathered we're under attack.
Who are they?
Said the arbitrator.
Unmarked craft, but I think we can hazard a guess.
The arbitrator turned to me.
The Federation?
How did they know? The people who made our disguises, perhaps?
We'll carry out the post-mortem later. And unless we want them to carry out the post-mortem on us, we need a change of plan.
I'm open to suggestions.
We're keeping ahead of them at the moment. The boat's just fast enough to manage that. But the autopilot isn't programmed for combat. It can't take evasive action.
He told the surviving guard to take the wheel. Then he came below deck in the small elevator.
You can't go on with this now,
the arbitrator said, whilst we waited for Avon.
You said yourself, for this to work, you need them to suspect nothing.
I know. I'm trying to make the best of the situation.
The best? At this stage, the best thing would be for you to let me go and then try to escape before we're all killed. I can tell them you died here and your bodies fell overboard.
Avon strode from the lift and straight into the discussion. And what will you do? Carry on as normal?
I'll reject the Mentex study.
No, you won't. Avon moved towards the arbitrator, a hard grin on his face. You're too afraid of them now. They won't even need the subliminal signals anymore.
You'll do what they want regardless. You'll be trying to second-guess what they want from every single case you see.
He was right, but this wasn't helping. I didn't think the Federation would intervene. They've never done anything like this here before. Is this more important to them than we realized? Calmly, Avon walked to the body of the guard and plucked the pistol from his hand. Then he turned and brandished the gun in the arbitrator's direction. The more important question is, do we kill him? The arbitrator took several steps back, reaching the wall. I rounded on Avon. Kill him? Why? The Federation will want to know why we did this, he replied.
If they don't know already. I doubt it. They probably just picked up something unusual. They may not even know it's us. But we can't let them know that we're targeting the Mentex study.
I won't say anything, said the arbitrator.
If they want you to, you will. You really don't understand these people at all, do you? I apologize for shattering your bubble of ignorance. I genuinely mean that. Avon, we can't kill him.
We can't leave him here. We can't carry out the mission. In fact, we've made things worse. The Federation will no longer regard him as clean. We'd be better off if he was replaced altogether.
That makes sense. But before the arbitrator could protest, I added, but we cannot kill him. We should take him with us.
Don't I get a say in this?
The arbitrator asked.
The choice is whether you die or leave. Do either of those appeal?
Avon didn't give the arbitrator time to answer.
I'm not giving you the choice anyway. We can't take him with us. He'll slow us down. We'll all end up dead. Sorry, I'm making this decision for your own good.
And he aimed at the arbitrator, who started to run for the lift at the far wall. Before Avon could fire, I stepped in front to block his shot.
This man hasn't done anything wrong. I will not let you kill him.
And was that when he shot you?
What?
Avon was the one who shot you, yes?
No. What made you think that? Avon's my friend.
Oh. It just seemed to make sense. Psychologically, I mean.
Maybe it does, but it's not what happened. He just pushed me out of the way.
Then how did you get shot?
I'm coming to that. By the time Avon got past me, he'd missed his moment. The arbitrator was on his way up in the lift. Avon kicked a footstool, then turned and walked towards the stairs up to the deck. I put a hand on his shoulder to stop him. I told you he hasn't done anything wrong.
Not yet. If we let him go, he will.
We all have a choice. Let him make his. He spent years making these decisions in the abstract. How do you think he's going to react when it becomes real? When the Federation start asking questions? When they start putting pressure on him? This has turned into a mess and we need to clear it up.
I was about to continue the argument, but was suddenly distracted by the lift, which was moving back down.
Avon broke away from me and took up a firing stance next to the lift.
Avon, can we please find out why he's coming back down before we kill him?
I'll give him 5 seconds. Unless he's got a gun, in which case I'll give him nothing at all.
The arbitrator emerged from the lift. He wasn't armed, and he looked terrified, although not of us.
They're landing.
We heard gunfire from above. The surviving guard shooting at a target off the yacht. As I listened to it, I briefly reflected that the arbitrator was more afraid of them than he was of us, and clung to the hope that we might yet salvage something from the situation. Fear is a powerful thing, but would his fear drive him to obedience or to action? Could we still try to put him back in place? Was there anything to be gained from it if we did? Avon was shouting at the arbitrator, who was insensible with panic. Avon wanted to know how many of them there were, how well armed they were. I was getting no answer. We heard more gunfire, this time tearing through the deck. We all ducked and the arbitrator was cursing us for having come here at all. I thought for a moment that Avon was just going to shoot him for being irritating. I wondered what the guard was doing up there and realized that the heavy thud I'd just heard was her body hitting the deck, which meant the yacht was back on autopilot. We then heard another series of thuds. Our attackers landing.
Avon clambered on one of the sofas, broke a window, and loosed several shots across the deck. Then dropped down. As the window was strafed with retaliatory shots, shattering the other windows.
Hit anyone? I asked.
Didn't stop to check, said Avon.
The arbitrator harangued him.
You idiot. They know we're down here now.
They knew that anyway. Where else are we going to be? The hatch that led to the deck was blasted off, and a soldier jumped down the steps. He wore dark grey body armour, marked with no insignia, and carried a large pulse cannon, which he fired. The arbitrator fell to the floor, and it was clearly no accident that he was the first to die. The soldier had been instructed to take him out of the equation, even though Avon and I were more dangerous. I concluded they wanted the arbitrator dead and us alive, and I thought to myself, they know it's us. Avon had time to let off two good shots before the intruder could respond. One of them hit his arm and forced him to drop the weapon. The other penetrated his armour at a weak spot in the neck, and he fell. I moved forward to pick up the cannon, just in time to shoot the next of the raiding party as he swooped in through the hatch. The shot penetrated his armour and he fell on his comrade's body. Avon took the newcomer's cannon. He never liked to be carrying the smallest gun in the room. I checked the arbitrator's body, but he was definitely dead. Obviously they, like Avon, had decided he was too much of a risk. They're probably working on influencing the replacement as we speak. Avon was right. We've made things worse.
But you realise none of this is true.
Isn't it? Doesn't this thing make me tell the truth?
It makes you tell what you believe is the truth. You really think the arbitrator is dead?
I checked his pulse myself, so yes. Also, one side of his face was burned off.
Look at the record for the day you say all this happened. A normal day's business. And the next day? And the next. The arbitrator is still working now.
And it doesn't say he's been replaced?
He hasn't been.
But he has no profile in public life. His image isn't circulated. You don't know what he looks like. His name isn't public either. If the information gets out, the data is eaten by tracker bugs within microseconds.
Are you suggesting this has all been covered up?
Seems fairly clear. Either this planet is more important to the Federation than we realised, or the study is. Or both. But this isn't anything unusual for them. I've seen it before.
You say that as if the Federation targets you personally.
I'd be disappointed if they didn't. I've worked hard enough to deserve it.
You're suffering from a classic paranoid delusion. The self-importance, the vast shadowy organisation conspiring against you, and the fact that you're focusing on the testing of antipsychotic drugs...
Did he decide on the Mentex study?
Yes. The same afternoon, as scheduled. He decided in favour of continuing.
Oh, yes, that's obvious. I just meant, did the hearing go ahead or was it postponed? If it went ahead, of course he decided in favour of Mentex. I mean, that's what's in this drip you've hooked up to my arm.
How did you know that?
You're not denying it, then. That's good.
How did you know? Did I just give it away?
No, I knew already.
I don't believe you. You're bluffing.
I don't need you to believe me. I didn't come here to look clever. I'm not Avon.
Patients aren't supposed to know they're part of the study. It invalidates the study.
Oh, dear, sorry. I wasn't much of a case to begin with, though, because you think I'm mad and I'm not. So if you thought the drug was working on me, I think you call that a false positive, don't you? Time up already. And I still haven't told you how I was injured. Maybe next time?
Cancel my next session. Go on.
You want to hear the end?
Go on.
All right. We were still in the hold. Two others had landed on the deck, but neither had come down. Avon and I were about to discuss our next move when the yacht started to turn. One of our boarders had taken the controls.
Where are they taking us?
The monitor automatically displayed how our course had changed. We were near the mainland, close to Engel City, but heading past it. Avon speculated that they probably had their own pickup point, somewhere out at sea. Just then, something rolled through a window and dropped into the room. A gas grenade. I got a glimpse of a soldier's feet through the window.
He'd had to come closer to deliver the grenade, and I quickly took the opportunity to fire my cannon at him. The cannon was powerful. My shot cracked the window apart, and the recoil threw me back into the sofa. I had no idea whether I'd killed the soldier, but we heard no more from him. Avon picked up the grenade and threw it back overboard, although both of us had already inhaled enough gas to burn our lungs and cloud our brains. Neither of us was fighting fit. If I'd killed the other soldier, that meant there was one left, the one piloting the yacht. If he put the yacht on autopilot, he'd come down here and take care of us. Avon had the same thought. Although he couldn't use the terminal down here to override the manual controls, he could destroy the autopilot. And he did so. The remaining soldier was stuck up there steering the yacht. Avon turned to me and snarled, "So what now?" I held up a hand and told him to be quiet. One of the things I like about Avon is that he doesn't take offence at that sort of thing. Instead, he listened along with me and heard what I was trying to hear. Above us, the drone of the attacker's craft still sounded. We both realised that there were more of them. "We need to get out of here. We may only have a few minutes before the reinforcements land." I looked around, my attention alighting on the dead soldiers at the bottom of the stairs. I walked over to them. Both were dead, but their bodies were largely intact. I pointed to the body on top. "Help me with this one."
"Help you how?" asked Avon.
"Pull him into the middle of the floor." After we'd done so, I started to pull off my flesh mask. It had been made to fit my face, and the features of the dead soldier were heavier set. But for our purposes, it would be close enough. Avon didn't wait for me to explain. He walked over to the other soldier and removed his own disguise. Once they'd been made to look like the men we'd pretended to be, we switched their clothes for our own. Any closer inspection would reveal our hasty deception, but it might buy us a little extra time. Then I examined the cannon I'd taken from the fallen soldier. "We need an explosion large enough to cover our exit. Not so large it sinks the yacht. The longer they think we're still aboard, the longer we'll have to get away." The cannon would do the job I needed it to. Of course, there was emergency breathing apparatus in the hold, as well as small propulsion units, enough to get us to shore. I asked Avon to ready the lift to go up to the wheelhouse. Then I programmed the gun's settings. "Be ready to run as soon as the cannon explodes." Avon nodded understanding, and we pulled our diving masks down. I armed the cannon, tossed it to Avon, and he placed it inside the lift. To myself, I counted down. 8, 7, 6. The lift went up, and Avon swiftly moved to join me at the bottom of the steps. I opened the hatch and counted 3, 2 in my head, and then out loud, "Go!" As Avon and I began to pelt up to the deck, the cannon's battery emptied into its focus chamber, overloading it. It exploded across the wheelhouse, killing the soldier. We were prepared for that and didn't lose our footing. What we weren't prepared for was the second explosion, as the soldier's own cannon caught the brunt of the blast, breaking it open and catching its own battery in the process. I'm surmising, of course, but with hindsight it was clear that's what had happened. This explosion, which seemed more powerful than the first, perhaps that was because the second cannon's battery was full, caused me to stumble as I ran out onto the deck. Avon pulled me to my feet, and I saw a haze of smoke and flame spreading above my head. We dashed to the rear of the yacht, and under the cover of the explosion, we dived beneath the surface of the water. We didn't have time to look back. So I never found out whether my plan to leave the yacht seaworthy, with our bodies apparently inside, succeeded or not. The second explosion might well have sunk it. All we knew was that we made it to shore, back to the city, on a place called White Beach. Nobody tried to apprehend us. It looked like we got away unnoticed. Removing ourselves to a secluded spot, it was still only the middle of the day, we recuperated and discussed the mission. Avon made his opinion abundantly clear.
"A disaster. A waste of time and resources."
We argued pointlessly for a few minutes. I accused him of not being fully committed to the mission, partly because I wasn't sure why he'd agreed to do it in the first place. It's hard ever to be sure of his motives. I think perhaps there was something else he wanted from the arbitrator, but I never found out what it was.
Then we calmed down. Avon was right. The mission had failed, and it wasn't over yet. We still had to return to the drop where we'd left the teleport bracelets, and the Federation knew we were in the city. As we rested, though, another thought entered my mind. Perhaps we haven't been thinking big enough here. We were trying to stop this drug coming into use, but what would that have done? Only delayed it, probably. That was the plan, Avon replied. Your plan. And even if we'd achieved that, even if we'd stopped it altogether, they'd have gone back to the drawing board, done a new study somewhere else, and we'd have had to sabotage that. So, what if we took a different tack? And I explained my plan. To get myself admitted to a hospital on this planet, our computer had set up false identities for us before we arrived, including medical records. Mine went under the name of Carlin Guzan. I'd get myself prescribed Mentex, and then get enough of it in my system that our computer would be able to analyse it and work on a counter-drug to neutralise it. Avon pointed out that we didn't know whether making a counter-drug was possible, and even if it was, implementing it would be a colossal task. He was right. It wouldn't be easy. But if we succeeded and could carry out the whole plan without the Federation's knowledge, imagine what that could mean. Whole planets might wake up. We could create the moment for revolution to ignite. And you're putting yourself forward to do this, said Avon.
I wouldn't ask anyone else to do it.
Good, because I'm certainly not doing it. And I wouldn't want you to embarrass yourself by asking. So, you need to get admitted to hospital. He pulled from his pocket the pistol he'd taken from the guard on the yacht. He held it loosely in the air between us. Do you want to do it, or shall I?
I took the pistol from him, dialed down the intensity, aimed, closed my eyes, and shot myself in the leg. By the time I'd opened my eyes, which was a few minutes later, it was unbelievably painful. Avon had gone.
You shot yourself?
Yes. So, what's your opinion of my sanity now?
I'm not sure anymore.
It's a quandary for me, too. Do I want you to believe me or not? If you don't, you won't raise any suspicions with the Federation, and I've done what I set out to do. Thanks to the Mentex drip, I don't think I need it anymore. There was always a certain amount of risk involved in telling you the truth and setting it on record. But if you think I'm a fantasist, it's not a problem. You'll just dismiss it all. However, I'd always prefer to have an ally for the cause. I'd rather you knew the reality of what the Federation does and were disgusted and wanted to work against it. So, what do you believe?
I don't know.
Give it some thought. If you decide you're on our side, could you erase my records, please? It's unlikely the Federation will ever spot it in amongst thousands of others, but if they pick up on anything odd in this case and decide to investigate, they'll be thorough.
You sound like you're leaving. You can't just discharge yourself.
Yes, I can. Avon teleported into the ward last night and dropped off my teleport bracelet. I just came here for a second dose of Mintex. Had to finish the story, of course. Didn't want to leave you on tenterhooks.
You never told me who you really are.
Yes, it's not easy skirting round details like that when you're hooked up to this gadget of yours. Had to focus quite hard on the stressful aspects of the whole experience to throw it off the scent. But I'll tell you now.
Why? After you went to all that effort not to.
I didn't want anyone to know whilst I was still here. In case the information got back to the Federation and they tracked me down. But I'm leaving now. And if people are to believe one man can make a difference, they need to know his name. Ready now, Callie. My name is Blake. Rog Blake.